Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Monday, November 7th. Today, outdoor reporter Jason Blevins discusses an unexpected turn of events in an energy company's plans for a hydropower project in Uinoweep Canyon. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Xcel Energy. Colorado has some of the nation's best wind and solar resources, and Xcel Energy is putting them to work for you. Their nation-leading wind energy expansion is reducing our carbon footprint while producing some of the lowest-cost electricity on the Colorado grid. Learn more at xcelenergy.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Years of patient, insistent lobbying bore fruit on this day in 1893, when most men who cast their ballots in Colorado agreed to extend the franchise to the women in their communities. The debate over equal suffrage for both sexes simmered from the earliest days of the United States. In Western territories, where new institutions and attitudes proved more malleable, women first found success in fighting for political equality. Wyoming Territory's legislature adopted equal voting rights in 1869, a policy included in the state constitution when it joined the Union in 1890. Colorado's constitution, adopted in 1876, extended the franchise to women in school board elections to aid their power over family affairs. Women suffragists recruited national figures like Susan B. Anthony to rally support in Colorado for a broader measure in 1877, but male voters balked, opposing the idea by more than a 2-to-1 margin. Advocates shifted their strategy to a quiet campaign of education. In some communities, they suggested that women voters would help check the influence of immigrants and assert American values. In others, they paired the franchise with the temperance movement, promoting health and public safety by suggesting that women at the polls could protect families from the evils of alcohol. By 1893, prominent supporters of equal suffrage included Governor Waite and former Governor John Rout. The measure passed by a margin of 6,000 votes, inspiring supporter Carolyn Churchill to declare, quote, "Come ye disconsolates, wherever you languish, come to Colorado and cast in your lot. Here the sun shines brightest and there is hope for all women." In a sense, Colorado's vote in 1893 proved even more impressive than Wyoming's constitution. For the first time in the United States, male voters considered the question of equal suffrage unfettered by any other issue and agreed that women deserved the same rights as men. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun invites you to hear from working journalists who have been covering the 2022 election season. Hear about their perspectives, experiences, and more with political reporter Jesse Paul. Registration is free. The event will be held virtually on November 17th from 6 to 7 p.m. Learn more at coloradosun.com/events. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation. I'm grateful to be here with you today, and I'm always happy on a Monday morning to be talking to our outdoor reporter, Jason Blevins. Good morning, Jason.
Hey, Carol. How are you?
Doing great, and particularly interested in following up on a topic that we have talked about a lot on this podcast, and that is the Xcel Energy project that they had planned for Uinoweep Canyon. And there was big news about that last week. Can you catch us up?
Sure. Tuesday last week, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission laid the groundwork for Xcel Energy. They accepted the utility's preliminary application to build a pumped storage hydro project in Uinoweep Canyon, sort of the first step in what would be a long process, but pretty controversial proposal up there in that canyon. In January, we wrote about a FERC filing by Xcel where they had proposed that these two reservoirs up there, 5,900 acre foot reservoirs, one up high on top of the mesa, one down below, right there at the divide of Uinoweep Canyon. And they would drop water from that top reservoir to the lower reservoir through turbines to generate, you know, as much energy to power 326,000 homes. Going to be a big component of Xcel's push to be carbon free in all its electrical plant generation by 2050. So really big project, but what they proposed kind of put a bunch of homes underwater. As you can imagine, people in that canyon were not too pleased with the plan, and they were starting to prepare for a big long fight and maybe see if they couldn't defend this canyon. It's a very unusual canyon in that it has two mouths. Creeks run both east and west out of this canyon. And as you know, most of canyons just have one mouth. So sort of a geologic wonder and a lot of cultural value in there. And so it looked as though this thing was going to go forward and we were going to be writing about it for the next 10, 20 years.
And just to locate it for our listeners, Uinuit Canyon is kind of southwest of Grand Junction and kind of northeast of Gateway over on the far western part of Colorado, almost to Utah. And so, this got a preliminary approval from the feds. And then?
The next day, the next morning, actually, I pop up on my email and right there, I get a ping from FERC that Xcel had pulled its permit and they were abandoning the project. Very surprising. I was out there in March in the Gateway Community Center and a number of Uniweepers were there, probably a couple hundred, and they were very concerned. It was a very tense meeting. Emotions were high. It was very polite, though. There wasn't a lot of yelling, but there was a lot of unhappy residents, you know, saying like, oh my gosh, you're really going to flood our canyon and turn it into a giant hydropower project. There was some concern that maybe they were going to just refile, they were going to adjust it, maybe relocate it, move it around a little bit. But turns out a couple hours later, they sent out a press release that said they had kind of looked at all the different geological, cultural, environmental impacts, engineering stuff, and the financial cost. You know, they were planning to spend close to $1.6 billion on this hydropower plant in the Uinuit. So that they were going to not be pursuing the Uinuit project and they were going to continue to explore new ways to kind of have that 24/7 electrical generation using clean power by 2050. So big push and kind of a big setback on that you know, carbon-free goal. But good news, I guess, for those Uinuiters out there who are really concerned about protecting their canyon and some of the wildlife and cultural values that they have up there. So pretty happy folks in the Uinuit Canyon. And I guess Xcel is back to the drawing board in terms of finding a new pumped storage hydro project so they can kind of add that new power generation. What's interesting about pumped storage is that they could use it at night when, say, solar and wind were starting to ebb. So they could have that sort of grid reliability at night when demand is high. And then they would spend a lot of energy to move that water back up the hill during the day and then sort of spill it back down. Many people consider pump storage hydro a battery, which is an interesting sort of technology in terms of not really what you consider a battery, but it is does provide electricity on demand. So pretty interesting concept. And I guess Xcel will be keeping in touch in terms of what they might find for a new spot.
Really wild turn of events. And it sounds to me like no one really expected it. Certainly people up over in the Uinuit area didn't. You talked to some residents who said they were flabbergasted.
Yeah, so pretty surprising turn. I think folks in that canyon were kind of bracing for what was going to be a 10 to 20 year, you know, kind of process and, you know, lots of studies and construction and pretty big plan. So we'll see where Xcel maybe looks again. Certainly seems as though that Uinuit was a tough spot, but, you know, is there a good spot to build a couple massive new reservoirs and move water to create clean energy? They need pretty good amount of vertical drops. So got to find like a high mesa and a canyon floor. I don't know. I wonder if there is a spot like that in Colorado.
Right. And that was one of the things I was wondering is what the next plan might be for Xcel and how soon we might know, whether it's in Colorado or elsewhere in some of the states that they provide service to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You got 1.5 million customers here in Colorado and a big plan to be carbon free. So we'll see what they can do. Definitely an interesting turn of events this week.
And I'm reminded of the flight that you took over the canyon earlier this year. Like you got a sweeping view in a small plane. And I bet that was pretty eye-opening for how large it is and how big the project would have been.
Yeah, really beautiful spot. You know, those folks out there were pretty surprised in January when we wrote a story that Xcel was planning a pump storage hydro project in their canyon. And we put a map with our story and, you know, the 12, 14 homeowners, when they looked at that map, their homes were underwater. That was a pretty shocking story for them. Was able to meet with a number of those and kind of spend time with them and hear their stories in terms of, you know, what this project would mean to them. And while they, you know, obviously understood the need to get some carbon-free power going, they did wonder if maybe, you know, there was a better spot for this. It's sort of an argument we hear often in the Colorado high country, call those folks NIMBYs. And these folks were literally going to lose their yards and their houses. So when they said not in their backyard, they were pretty much fighting for the existence of their home. So pretty interesting argument out there.
It was, and you broke that story to him. You found out about that, and I think everybody learned about it from the Colorado Sun. The other story I was hoping to touch base on real quickly also has to do with water, but in a very different way, and that is just a real lack of kokanee salmon in the Gunnison River drainage area that anglers and biologists are wondering what happened.
Sort of the hot question out there in Gunnison County right now, our superstar photographer out there in Gunnison, Dean Krakel. He started this season, chasing, I think they sent millions of fry young kokanee salmon out of the Roaring Judy hatchery. And then those fish spill all the way down to the Blue Mesa Reservoir, and then they spawn. And at the end of the season, they swim back up to the Roaring Judy hatchery. And Dean had great stories of them releasing all these fry at the Roaring Judy, and then was going to sort of trace them and follow them back up the East and Gunnison Rivers as they kind of climb up from Blue Mesa and back up to that hatchery, to kind of spawn the way salmon do. And this year they released millions, but they are not seeing very many at all come back. And that's sort of super perplexing. On an average year, they get about 14,500 kokanee make their way from Blue Mesa all the way up to the Roaring Judy hatchery every autumn. And then the folks at the hatchery take those fish and strip 8 million eggs and sort of strip and fertilize those eggs and get them ready for the next season's release of all those young kokanee. This year, they say there's only about 2,000 kokanee have made the way up from Blue Mesa up the east in Gunnison to all the way to the hatchery. And that is super disturbing. It has sort of compounding effects. They're not going to be able to harvest as many eggs, which means there'll be fewer fry to release the next spring. What does that mean? Could we be at the edge of a major problem with kokanee salmon out there in the Gunnison River Basin? And that's troubling, as you think about those fish out there. There's a bunch of guides and, anglers, obviously, that love them, guides that go out there. The folks at the hatchery give away those fish to kind of folks in need. And a lot of people drive up from all over once a week to get these salmon and go put them in the freezer for the winter. Lots of folks kind of wondering where those fish are. There's a little bit of time left, but if they don't show up in the next week or so, we could be on the cusp of a kind of serious problem with the kokanee hatchery there in the Gunnison River drainage.
It is scary. And Dean Krakel, you referenced, who wrote this story for us and took some amazing photos with it. He lives in Almont, Colorado, which is a little bit northwest of Gunnison. And he like you said, he's tracked this for us for a while. And that story that he wrote is going to be on ColoradoSun.com this coming week, a little bit later. But the hatchery manager out there, the Judy Hatchery, they really don't have any idea right now, do they, as to what might have happened to them?
Pretty concerning. We'll see. A little bit of time left. Maybe the fish are just waiting. Going to have a late push, but hopefully they'll start finding them, start showing up.
Well, thanks for talking over these two things with us, Jason. And I hope you have a great week. We've got election on Tuesday, and I know that you and I have talked about some of the issues that affect the mountain towns in Colorado. So maybe we can circle back on that in the next week or two. And in the meantime, if any of our listeners have questions or thoughts about the Daily Sun Up podcast, drop us an email at podcast@coloradosun.com. And thanks again to Jason and everyone who helped produce today's podcast, including our production partners, Pirate Audio. Have a wonderful day out there, and I sincerely hope that you can join us for the next Daily Sun Up.
You can read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Boulder County prosecutors last week filed felony charges against Democratic State Representative Tracy Burnett, alleging that she lied about her residence to run for re-election this year in a district that's more politically favorable. Burnett, who represents House District 12 and is running for her second term, is the latest in a string of Colorado politicians to face allegations over lying about where they live. She is charged with 3 felonies, including forgery, and 2 misdemeanors. Burnett is free on a personal recognizance bond and is due in court November 17th. A new mobile app offers a window into the underappreciated legacy and history of Black Coloradans. The Black History Trail uses History Colorado's collection of books, manuscripts, artifacts, and photographs to connect sites, places, and stories with the help of Black communities statewide. The stops along the trail are divided into 4 regions where app users can learn about historic sites and stories that shaped the African American experience in Colorado. The app provides access to historic photographs, oral histories, and a podcast. Find the Black History Trail app on Apple, Google Play, or wherever you download apps for your smartphone. A sprawling plan to develop roughly 150 oil and gas wells on 20 sites in northeastern Aurora was approved by the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Crestone Peak Resources' Box Elder Comprehensive Area Plan encompasses 55 square miles that range from minority communities to the nests of bald eagles and burrowing owls. Crestone is already operating 130 oil and gas wells in the city, including 68 that would fall under the comprehensive plan, raising its total to 219 wells. Half of the 20 drill sites have already been developed. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of the Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.